Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today. As we begin the show by talking about snowmobiling, our guest Gary Eddy is the ATV Snowmobile Administrator for the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture. Department of Natural Resources. Where did I get agriculture? Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Bureau of Law Enforcement. Great to have him along. And certainly I'm glad to have you listening in. You may do some snowmobiling or maybe you're interested in it. Have some questions about it. I hope you'll join us. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org. Or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you. And, Gary Eddy, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for the invite.
Just in general, how many snowmobilers do we have in the state? How many snowmobiles?
We have, on average, we have about 220,000 Wisconsin registered snowmobiles. And then we're looking at probably add another 14, 15,000 out-of-state trail passes. Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a few people out there on those.
Yeah, it can be pretty busy out there sometimes.
If someone has never snowmobiled before, what's the best way to learn?
Well, you know, the first recommendation with any activity is to, you know, try to do it safely. So, you know, the department recommends getting yourself into a snowmobile safety education classes. They're taught all over the state, and we also have some online versions. And there's also a law attached with that stating that people that are at least age 12 and those born on or after January 1st, 1985 are required to have that. So it's almost like a snowmobile operator's license because we're getting up into the upper 20s that people are required to have that.
Okay, and so that's one of the laws. Are there other laws and regulations that govern, what are the ones that govern snowmobiling here in the state?
Well, you know, and that's another good step if you're new to the activity is to, you know, familiarize yourself with the laws and regulations. Just like, you know, any other recreational activity in the state, they're going to have some unique laws that are associated with that activity. So whether you're out hunting or fishing or snowmobiling or riding an ATV, another good step is to get those regulations and familiarize those. And if you have any questions, contact the department.
And I know there's a proposed law that would link recreational vehicle OWIs with a person's driver's license. I don't think that happens now.
No, currently does not.
Can you explain what that would mean?
Well, this proposal, this is the second year it's come up in the state legislature, and it was put together after the user groups meeting together for several years to discuss it. I mean, the boating groups, ATV and snowmobile groups, recognizing that there's a similar issue with alcohol abuse on mm-hmm. recreational vehicles. They said, hey, it's not just exclusive to snowmobiling or ATV or boating. So they got together, discussed this, and came up with some recommendations. And basically those recommendations, you know, were transformed into a legislative bill language. And in a nutshell, what that proposal does is it pretty much gives people a first chance. You're getting a warning on this mm-hmm. because you'll get cited for OWI on a boat, an ATV, or a snowmobile, and it would be just like it is currently, which is you get a high fine. There's no attachment to your driver's license, no real other penalties other than paying the fine, maybe taking some courses along with that. Second offense, if it was within a five-year period, then under this proposal, that would be affecting your driver's license in the form of you're going to get your driver's license revoked. You were cited once.
Didn't learn from it.
So the second offense is, you get your driver's license revoked and, all the penalties that go along with that. And then this change also creates a suspension for your recreational vehicle operating privileges. If you do get arrested for OWI on a boat, snowmobile, or ATV, you've lost your privilege to operate all of those vehicles for a period of time, much like a motor vehicle. And then also, if you were arrested for operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated, you don't have a right to operate a recreational vehicle while your motor vehicle privileges are suspended.
Okay.
So it kind of ties in that way. And like I said, it gives a little bit of a wiggle room for people You know, it gets a little sensitive because it is a recreational vehicle, recreational activity. Yeah. So way it's like, okay, first time you get the penalty, but it's not as harsh. Second time, it's like we need to ramp it up a little bit more.
Absolutely. Gary Eddy, our guest today, ATV snowmobile administrator for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, Bureau of Law Enforcement. Great to have him with us today. Certainly, if you have questions, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mueller Show. We have Joe from Northern Wisconsin commented that he thinks the noise that snowmobiles make leads to a lot of opposition to them because they're kind of noisy. And his understanding is that it's possible to make them or manufacture them quieter than they are, but there's some opposition to that. I just wondered if you'd comment on that, or he wonders if you would comment.
Yeah, most of the snowmobiles now that are manufactured, they do have to meet certain decibel limits, when they come off the showroom. And what happens is, you know, it's usually one of the first modifications a snowmobile owner will make to the machine is put a different exhaust system on there. And Wisconsin does have a decibel limit for snowmobiles. It's 88 decibels. And that's something we enforce pretty readily, more so than any of our neighboring states. And so we get that's our kind of a goal, get out there, let the public know that we are enforcing these decibel limits. And I think what we really found, though, is peer pressure has really done most of the enforcement for us. The snowmobile club members out there, if they see somebody on the trail with a loud machine, they know how that affects their ability to get trails on private property, and they kind of browbeat that person to death.
Yeah.
And so we found a large amount of compliance with that. It's not nearly as the problem as it's been.
As that used to be, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, 88, normal conversations, I think, about 60 decibels. Mm-hmm. So 88 is not a lot higher than normal conversation, I guess.
Yeah, it's all about the testing process. I could get an engineer to talk to you, but I haven't made it through one of those conversations yet.
Okay. John in Milwaukee has a question or comment. Hi, John.
Hi. I guess I was just wondering, you're proposing additional rules or regulations on snowmobiles and ATVs. Do you have any numbers or figures on how many people outside of the one who is directly operating that vehicle has been impacted by their negligent use of it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to clarify that, it's not a department proposal. It's a legislator wrote up a bill and introduced it, and that didn't stem from the department. But, as far as the second part of that question, figures on the amount of people that it's impact, you know, that's a huge wave right there of impact when a person dies in a snowmobile accident, starting from the very beginning part of the people that they ride with, seeing that maybe they're trying to save their life on a trail by performing CPR or whatever, and it's usually a friend or relative that they're trying to save, and then it kind of extends from there. The first responders that show up on scene trying to perform life-saving efforts, law enforcement that have to notify the next of kin, and then all the it just goes on from there. You know, coworkers, friends, and expenses and costs to the healthcare industry, and loss of productivity from this person for the rest of their life. You know, that all affects us greatly.
Generally speaking, a person's inability to act responsibly, the majority of the impact is on that individual. Would you not agree?
Yeah, I'd say a majority of our fatal incidents are just that person. But like I said, they're usually riding with a group, and I don't think anybody can really measure what type of impact it has on the people that are right there on scene. But we do have accidents almost every year that involve other people as well. A real nasty one that comes to mind 2 years ago where a single rider took out a young married couple, and that was a three-person fatality there. So to say it always impacts just that individual rider, I'd say that's probably not completely accurate.
Yeah, and if you have a chance, well, you wouldn't want to have the chance, I don't expect, to have to be on the site as an enforcement person. I'm sure, Gary, you may have been on the scene of some of these. You, certainly, because you're in charge for the state, you've probably seen the pictures and the photographs that have to be taken at these scenes, and they're, I'm sure, not something you want to view.
No, nobody wants to view that at all. And you know, aside from seeing the pictures, I've had many conversations with the next of kin, and they have a lot of questions, and they want to know why, and that's tough because you know the person was you know greatly loved and missed, and it's tough.
Yep.
Could I ask one additional question?
Sure.
I think I understand that, and you know, it makes sense. Is this, whatever the legislator is proposing, is he or she also including a proposal to link up boating and OWI boating with your driver's license as well?
Yes.
Yes, this current legislative bill would be across the board. It'd be boat, snowmobile, and ATV, OWIs all tied in, not only with each other, but also with a driver's license.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org with your questions or comments. How many miles? We have a lot of miles of snowmobile trail. At one point, I remember someone from the DNR telling me we had more snowmobile miles than we had interstate highway system. I don't know if that's correct or not, but...
Well, what we're looking at, I mean, as far as... funded snowmobile trails, we're at about 18,000-19,000. You add in some unfunded club trails, we're probably right at about 22,000 miles of trails throughout the state.
Well, that's a pretty good chunk as of miles.
Absolutely,
is
yeah,
it?
It's been that way for quite a while. You know, our trail system started in the 70s by you know, a lot of hard work from individuals and the first snowmobile club members.
And so the state runs, operates approximately, what, 20,000, did you say?
Yeah, around 20,000. And, you know, and again, that's state-funded. I wouldn't say the state operates as far as,
right.
You know, there are some state-owned trails there that are managed by the state, but majority are operated through the counties and then through contracts with local snowmobile clubs that do the brunt of that work.
Yeah, I'd like to hear from some snowmobilers actually today on the show, and also maybe some members of clubs as well to get their take on snowmobiling here in the state. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Gary Eddy, our guest today, ATV Snowmobile Administrator with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Bureau of Law Enforcement. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in here as we talk snowmobiling with our guest Gary Eddy of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Great to have him along. Again, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We would love to hear from you. And Mike in La Crosse on board. So let's go right there to Mike. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I guess my comment is on safety. As there is a up around the, it's up in northern Wisconsin about a week and a half ago, there was a fatality up there. A young man in his mid-20s was killed on what was supposed to be just a short trip, was taking one of his younger cousins for a short ride. And for that reason, since it was just going to be a little spin before they went in for dinner, they didn't wear their helmets. Well, he lost control of the snowmobile. Fortunately, he pushed her off the sled before they hit a tree, but he hit the tree and he's now dead, and little girl, fortunately, is okay. So if anybody gets a moving snowmobile without a helmet on, they're a fool. And anybody who lets their kid on a moving snowmobile without a helmet on should be really questioned whether or not they're a responsible parent. And that's all I've got to say. I'll leave it at that.
Well, Mike, I thank you very much for calling. And Gary, I'm sure you have a comment.
Yeah, you know, tremendous tragedy there, definitely, you know, anytime you involve some minor children. But, you know, the caller's correct. You know, that's one of the first most important rules of snowmobile safety is to protect yourself through wearing a helmet. And in that particular crash, I think everybody let their guards down. They're on private property. It's probably land familiar to him. And that's when the speeds increased, and obviously he was going too fast because he overshot the end of the field and was unable to stop and ended up hitting some trees. But fortunately, the young girl did survive. But he's absolutely right. Always wear a helmet, and you know, you got to practice safe snowmobiling even on private property, probably especially on private property because you let your guard down.
Yeah, and there's no law that says that you have to wear a helmet, is there?
No, there isn't.
Not like a motorcycle. Isn't there motorcyclists? Are they? They're required, aren't they?
Nope.
Nope?
Nope. Well, if you're of a certain age, anyone that's under the age of 18 is required to wear a helmet on an ATV or a motorcycle. But above that, it's you know, your own personal choice. And with snowmobiling, you'd think it'd be kind of a no-brainer because it's it's wintertime and you know, you want to protect your face from frostbite and whatever. But like the caller said, short trips or if somebody's just ice fishing or whatnot, you tend to see them not wear helmets once in a while.
Let's turn to Ren Carl in Presque Isle. Thank you very much for calling. Hello.
Larry.
Yes.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Gary is familiar with the Vilas County Snowmobile Alliance. I am the president, and we took a very proactive move about 3 years ago after a lot of unfortunate publicity regarding an accident up here on St. Germain, and our snowmobile alliance developed what we call a snowmobile safety committee. And Gary's been there. He's talked to our group. I'd like to just point out that snowmobiles and the snowmobile program in Wisconsin is operated entirely by volunteers. Well, not quite entirely, but in Vilas County, we maintain about 500 miles of trail, and that's all set, marked, and maintained by volunteers. And across the state of Wisconsin, there's, you know, 23,000. That's almost the circumference of the earth. And I don't know of any other program in this state that depends so heavily on volunteers.
Hmm. Comment from you, Gary.
No, Ren's absolutely right. And it's something I, you know, mentioned earlier in the program that these trails are maintained 100% by, well, not 100%, but nearly 100% by volunteer club members, and that started back in the creation of the statewide trail system. It was also by volunteers,
And also I think the clubs do a good job of, you know, especially working with private landowners and that, because the private lands are a very important part of this whole snowmobile process, I would guess.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's a year-round process for those club members. I mean, they're working on these landowner agreements throughout the year and speaking with different landowners and getting those permissions. And unfortunately, you know, we have some, you know, careless operators out there that you know, don't care about the work that's put into it, and they'll do things like trespass or drive, you know, loud snowmobiles, loud exhaust systems late at night. That eventually affects those landowners where they're like, you know what, I'm sorry, but we don't want this trail system across our property anymore. Mm-hmm. And then that's when the real work begins, because you have to jump through a lot of hoops to try to reroute that, and it's very, very painstaking. So, yeah, you know, a lot of credit goes to the snowmobile clubs out there for all the work they do, and you know, we definitely encourage people to assist. You know, if they enjoy snowmobiling, assist those club members by becoming a member.
Ren, what do you do? What does your organization do to sort of recognize individual landowners, private landowners, or do you do anything?
Oh, absolutely. In Vilas County, we have 11 independent clubs from Phelps down to Land O'Lakes. We have clubs all the way down to Lac du Flambeau. Every year we recognize our landowners, and every year we lose access. And in no small order, the politics involved in maintaining a snowmobile system in a county like Vilas is a major endeavor. We're a county that relies on the hospitality industry. And so our club and our association has taken a lot of proactive moves with regard to safety, lobbying for better legislation with regard to nighttime speed limit, OWI, as Gary was mentioning. But, yeah, we recognize our landowners, and we recognize, first of all, in this county, our number one landowner is the state of Wisconsin, the Northern Highland American Legion State Forest.
Excellent. Thank you very much for calling. And that's I think that you'll find that across the state, won't you, Gary? That clubs are, you know, doing all they can to work with landowners and recognize them.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I'd just like to point out that, you know, Ren mentioned the Vilas County Snowmobile Safety Committee. That's one of the first in the state, really, where it's a branch of the county board. And, you know, we have to really recognize Vilas County for being very proactive and recognizing that snowmobile is important to that area and communication is important. And I think it's really brought a lot of people together. And hopefully that trend continues with other counties.
We had an email from Charity in Madison who says, I'm a recent transplant to Wisconsin, never been on a snowmobile in my life, but I'm curious about it. What would be a good way to get started or, you know, have an experience?
Well, you know, like I mentioned before, the first step is to get yourself in a snowmobile safety class and familiarize yourself with safe operation of those vehicles. And then, you know, the other part is just getting in touch with people that are familiar with snowmobiling or enjoy it, and you can do that, you know, either through friends on Facebook or social media, or the snowmobile clubs have a bunch of people right there that dedicate their lives to snowmobiling and enjoy it.
So, if is there a list somewhere, or maybe you just go online and say snowmobile clubs in her case, she could say snowmobile clubs in the Madison, Wisconsin area, or
yeah, if you type in Wisconsin snowmobile clubs, any Google search, you're going to find all the information you need right there.
Okay, all right, so give it a shot, see what happens. Let's go to Lee and Baraboo next. Hi, Lee.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Great program. I had a couple comments. The first one is, and you touched on it briefly, the respective landowners. I've set up a number of trails and helped set up a number of trails in the Sauk County area, and I don't think riders a lot of times realize, you know, some landowners may be in Illinois or, you know, clear out of the state that own that land, and you're asking their permission, and, you know, once people disrespect that, it's a big hassle to try and reroute a trail around, you know, somebody else's property because they've been upset by the way, you know, people have treated, you know, their property and such on snowmobile. I would also say that I think snowmobilers, on the other hand, you know, if you get together with a group of people and you stop and you have a soda and a burger at a restaurant or wherever along a trail, you know, they're some of the most respectful people I've met, you know. We all seem to get along and you know, that's a huge asset, I believe. The second part of my question is, we get a lot of people in our area come up and ride the 400 bike trail in the wintertime. And has there been any, I guess, thought of, you know, we get a lot of people from Illinois, Iowa, that come up and get on this 400 trail because you can quickly get to these other trails and then break off and go anywhere. But, you know, somewhat of an extra fee because I know, you know, in the wintertime, in the summertime, you have to have a bike pass. In the wintertime, though, you don't. And I just thought that, you know, that may possibly be a way that, you know, extra revenue could be generated to, you know, help support these clubs that, you know, again, are operated by volunteers and, you know, help maintain the trail system.
Okay. A comment, Gary?
Yeah, as far as the fee for the 400 trail itself, I guess we try to avoid, you know, having these specific fees for, you know, just certain areas, and it's more like across the board. As we mentioned earlier in the program, each snowmobile is required to be registered. If you're a resident of Wisconsin or if you're a non-resident, you're also eligible. And then if you choose not to register your snowmobile in Wisconsin, you're charged a trail pass to operate, and that's all trails, whether they're state or private. And you know, each year that comes up to about $6 or $7 million that goes back to, you know, trail maintenance to fund those 22,000 miles of trails in the state.
So that's how that works. Okay, great. Thank you, Lee, for calling. We have Jason in Oregon next. Hi, Jason.
Hi. I'm just calling about ATVs. And last couple of years, ridden ATVs, do a lot more trail riding with the kids as they got older. Wondering if in the southern part of the state, if there's more trails that you can ride in the wintertime. We visit the Cheese County Trail down in the southern state. But snowmobile trails, looks like everything's off limits. ATVs, do you have any suggestions that are more local, the southern half of the state?
Yeah, in the southern part of the state, it is pretty thin as far as any, you know, winter ATV riding activities. And that if they do allow winter use of ATVs on snowmobile trails, it's usually at the local level. And so that's probably where you'd have to start. If you know of a trail system, you'd have to try to get a hold of those land managers and find out what their policy is. I know up north there's just a handful of trail systems up there that allow winter ATV use, but they have some special regulations on as far as what time of year and certain temperatures and whatnot. But, yeah, it's usually a local decision, so you have to contact them locally to find that out.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you very much. And Adam and Merrill, on to you now. Hi, Adam.
Hi. I just got a question for, like, vintage sleds. Those of us out there that only use the vintage sleds, say, one, two times a year or whatever, is there anything coming down the pike for just, like, a one-time registration fee? Because, you know, you pay the registration fee every year, and, like, say, your antique cars or whatever, you just have your collector's plates, and I was wondering if there's something coming down the pike like that.
Hmm.
Well, the only thing that's really come up, boy, I'd say in the last 5 years, every year, it seemed like there's proposed legislation to change the antique snowmobile law to language similar to that is in a motor vehicle world, which is 30 years and older would qualify for that antique or classic registration. And I haven't heard any proposed legislation this year, but that would require a law change if we're talking about any type of different registration for those vehicles. So as I recommend to any member of the public, you know, we have elected officials and they should be in contact with them for any suggestions on law changes. But yeah, currently right now, no movement on that issue.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Kitty in Lake Mills, hi to you.
Hello. I live on the Glacial Drumlin Trail.
Okay.
And I should probably qualify this by saying I have kind of a bias against snowmobiling. I get that speeding on an engine is fun. I don't get the environmental awareness that's involved in that. But at any rate, living on the trail, you know, people walk on it, and it's a bike trail. And over the 15 years I've lived here, I've seen it degrade the trail without sort of a compensatory maintenance. I've never seen people picking up cans of soda and beer and things like that, like a volunteer kind of movement from snowmobile clubs. The other thing is that the noise pollution, you know, police can't monitor people speeding up and down trails. And I understand that, but they do, and especially at bar time. And then when we're watching TV, snowmobiles cut off the program. They, I don't know what you call it technically, but what you're watching kind of dissolves, and you can't see it when the snowmobiles go by. So I'm just wondering what, you know, it's not private land, but there are homeowners who are affected by the traffic, and I wonder where the fairness kind of in the monitoring and the maintenance and all that comes into play on a state trail.
All right, interesting question there, comment. Gary, what's... and by the way, I made an error when I talked earlier about sound levels. The difference between 60 decibels and 80 decibels is really a considerable amount. It's not just a little amount. It's a considerable amount.
Well, it is, and at 2 in the morning, it's
even worse. Yeah, it's even worse. All right, comment, Gary?
Certainly. Well, I guess just a comment on the Glacial Drumlin Trail itself. You know, it is a state multi-use trail, and that is something that the state DNR is tasked with as far as providing recreational users to a vast variety of people, and each group is going to have different desires, wants, and needs, and it's very difficult to try to manage that sometimes. But this is a multi-use trail, as a caller mentioned, biking and walking and what have you in the year-round, really, and then it is open to snowmobiling.
But the bridges are being kind of ripped up, mm-hmm. and they're not really, they're getting worse over the 15 years I've lived here, and I don't see that. I mean, the snowmobiles just tear them up.
Mm-hmm. Yep, there's definitely some maintenance that comes along with snowmobile use on these types of trails. And a portion of those snowmobile registration dollars does go back to state trail maintenance. The funding is available there. If projects are written for that type of maintenance, they're usually funded.
Just one more really quick question. Do they have trails like this that are sometimes just, since there's so many fields and things for snowmobiles, do they ever just take a trail like this and say, this is just for people who want to walk and ski and snowshoe and be quiet in winter? Do they have anything like that?
Yes, they do have some trails like that where they are off-road or off-limits to motorized type use. But really, I mean, something with the Glacial Drumlin Trail, which is really a railroad grade, former railroad grade, the funding used to secure that really dictates what type of use it's allowed on it. And if it's a combination of funding, utilize it that is earmarked for allowing snowmobile recreation and the foot and bike travel, then that's what has to be, that use has to be allowed for that.
Yeah.
But as far as the noise issue, I mean, and speed issue, I mean, if you definitely have complaints, that can be reported. Any law enforcement officer in the state can enforce snowmobile regulations, and of course the DNR is tasked with that as well. But
there a hotline for that kind of thing?
Yep. If you if you just get on our website, that's right on the main page there. As far as either the call center, as far as general type of information, or the hotline number, which is 1-800-TIP WDNR.
1-800-TIP-WDNR. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. I got a Facebook question from Darren in La Crosse. Can you get a license or registration for any recreational vehicle? We take factory-built go-karts out on the ice to race. I was told we could not have them on the ice because they don't have a registration.
Well, I guess to answer the first question, can you register any vehicle? No. Each vehicle has a statutory definition as far as basically what it is, whether it be a snowmobile or an ATV or whatnot, and go-karts aren't going to meet that ATV definition. I guess would be the closest to that. So no, it doesn't qualify for registration. However, on the other hand, the answer to can I operate on the frozen waterways of the state? The answer is yes. I mean, it's kind of whatever you can operate goes out there. There's no registration requirement for vehicles specifically on the ice. So motorized vehicles or motorcycles or go-karts, whatever, that all can be operated out there.
But there are some local ordinances. For example, in Madison, you can't any machine you take out on the lake has to float, has to be able to float.
Absolutely, yep. Always check locally for local regulations. They may be more restrictive. And, yeah, as Larry pointed out, Madison Lakes, most of them require that flotation, and then you have to be inspected by the Sheriff's Department. That's a Dane County ordinance.
We had a Mary in Cedarburg. Has been snowmobiling for 20 years since she was 15. She always looked forward to winter. It's good to get out on the trails and see the animals and the beauty of Wisconsin. It's not to be missed. All the clubs and volunteers do a fantastic job and should be congratulated. And with that said, I've become very scared to be on the trails now. Sleds have so much horsepower and speed. You combine that with alcohol, and that equals trouble. And unfortunately, bars are the frequent stopping points for potty breaks, warming up, and just too easy to have a few while you're there. I think one caller was trying to make that point of, so what if I drink Crash? It doesn't concern anyone but myself. That's, we certainly found that not the case, as Gary's pointed out. And she says, Gary, you made the point of family, EMS workers, etc. But I think most drunk drivers only think of themselves. I've been driven off trails too many times by idiots speeding and not having control. Realize it's tough to enforce. Sad to say that the actions of others affect everyone. Hope it doesn't reach the point where they make me park my sled because I'm too scared. Thanks for your good work. Let it snow.
Yep, and she's absolutely right. That's kind of the general consensus of the majority of the snowmobilers out there. You know, when we talk about the people that usually attract the headlines, it's the snowmobilers that were intoxicated. Usual factors in our crashes are intoxication, speeding, and operating at nighttime when your visibility is lower. And that's a broken record year after year. Those are always the top three. So, it makes sense that the majority of the snowmobilers say, well, we don't operate at night or we stay up the trails on weekend. And, you know, that's an unfortunate thing to hear when you're talking about a public trail, which really should be open and for anybody to operate at any time. But, I just spent some time up in Eagle River up there during the World Championship races, working a DNR booth, talking to that's really the core of the snowmobile public right there. And, it was right in line there. Everybody felt the same. They knew there was an alcohol issue with a small percentage of operators out there, really, that come up. And, they're usually on vacation. It's a recreational activity. And, by golly, they're going to cut her loose, and have fun. And really, it's kind of an irresponsible decision to be that closed-minded to think that that they can act like that, because really with snowmobiling, you're either snowmobiling or you're drinking. You cannot combine both activities. Yeah. The department really promotes zero alcohol, which is, not a drop until you get back to your lodge or your cabin or your hotel, and you can have all the alcoholic beverages you want at that point safely without harming yourself or anybody else out there.
Gary, great pleasure to have you with us today. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Gary Eddy is the ATV Snowmobile Administrator for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Bureau of Law Enforcement. Well, I'm back. We'll do this again. I think he had some great tips for enjoying the Wisconsin forests and other areas by snowmobile. And next up, we'll talk about what products come out of those forests and how they contribute to research on bioenergy. We have a great conversation coming up with folks from the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.